haul big money like my daddy never seen. But a feeling follows after me like a hound dog at my heel. 'Cause I know that I'll never see my mountain home again. Don't they say that you can't go home again? Never sit and talk among your child. Never live among your neighbors and your kin. No, you'll never see your mountain home again. Down at the railway station in the early afternoon, you will find them carrying bundles that are all made up in twine. Now they hear the whistle from the south, they're saying their goodbye. And they know they'll be back again, but they're leaving for all time. Don't they know that you can't go home again? Never sit and talk among your childhood friends. Never live Cincinnati, Baltimore, Chicago, and Detroit. You will find us by the thousands with our husbands and our wives. If you wonder what we're doing here so far away from home, we are Blue Ridge Mountain refugees and we're fighting for our lives. 'Cause we know that we can't go home again. Never sit and talk among your childhood friends. Never live among our neighbors and our kin. No, we'll never see our mountain home again. No, we'll never see our mountain.
Occupation was mining, West Virginia his home. Well, it was just before 12 I was feeding the children. Ben Mosley come running for to bring us the news. Number 8 is all flooded, many men are in danger, and we don't know. So I picked up my baby and I left all the others to comfort each other and pray for their own. There's Timmy's 14 and there's John not much younger. Their own time soon will be coming to go down the black hole. Well, if I had the money to do more than just feed them, I'd buy them some learning the best could be found. Then when they grow up, they'd be checkers and waiters and not to my heart that's clear broken if my darling is gone. Oh, say, did you see him going early this morning? He passed by your door on his way to the cold. He was tall, he was slender, and his dark eyes so tender. His occupation was mining West Virginia, his home.
That's a Gene Ritchie song. About brainwashing, about the kinds of bullshit that's put down to us all the time through the media, through advertising, about who we are, about how we look to ourselves, to other people, about what our role ought to be, about what kind of big four-wheel drive, what color big four-wheel drive trucks we ought to be driving, where we ought to be working, and how much we ought to be making, and what we should be spending it for. Like, this is Hazel's song about the Mannington Mines. You can read in the paper, hear the radio tell, us to raise our children to be miners as well. got some, could well mean your death. Your corneosis, black lung blue. You get the one, you get the other, either way. I'll tell nobody nothing, I'll just keep working on. The kids need all their schooling before I'm dead and gone. Black lung blues. So you get the one, you get the other. Either way you lose. When I get up to heaven, St. Peter's gonna cry. When I tell him the reason this poor boy had to die. The corneosis. Black lung blues. You get the one, you get the other. Some black lung blues. I lay down my paper shovel. Lose these black lung blues. Black lung blues. You get the one, you get the other. Either way you lose.
That song was written by DJ and Pikeville, Kentucky, named Mike Paxton, and recorded by the Goins Brothers, also Pike County, I think, in 1968, when about the time of the big strike, the biggest wildcat strike in labor history, 40,000 miners walked off the job in West Virginia. Because the legislature was having a hard time making up its mind about whether or not there was such a thing as black lung. Debates have been going on for months. You ought to have seen the doctors that the industry created up there. And they said there's no such a thing as black lung. They've been compensated in England since 1933. Recognized the danger of it in European mines, populous mines where they rotated workers in and out of dusty areas rather than letting any one person be exposed to it too long. But then they aren't so hot on their production here. You know, they don't get out as much coal as American mines do. And that's important. So they came out, 40,000 miners did, and they were out. They weren't out so very long before the legislature suddenly realized that there was a black lung condition, and they passed some legislation to set up a law to compensate this condition of miners. Now there's a doctor at Morgantown that just discovered that everybody's been wrong all this time, that there really isn't such a thing as black lung after all. And this thing that people are dropping dead of every day is in fact caused by cigarette smoke. And so they ought to just repeal all that stuff and not give these old farts any more money. But you see how much they smoke. That's the main cause. So all the grassroots black lung activity is back in motion again. There are meetings and there are plans being laid. Old guys coming to these meetings, they can barely walk from where they park their car inside, wherever it is. Old fellas struggling along, hardly getting a breath. And it's going to be pretty interesting to see what happens about all that. I sang at a rally in Morgantown a few weeks ago. Hazel Green was up there. There was some talk for a while, and then Hazel got her up and sang her song about it. He's had more hard luck than most men could stand. The mines was his first love, but never his friend.
He's lived a hard life, and hard he must die. Black lungs done got him, his time it is nigh. Black lung, you're just abiding your time. Well, soon all this suffering I leave behind, and I can't help but wonder what God had in mind. Who sent such a devil to claim this soul of mine? Well, he went to the boss man, but he closed the door. Well, it seems you're not wanted when you're sick and you're poor. You're not even covered on their medical plans, and your living depends on the favors of men. Down in the poorhouse on starvation's plan, where pride is a stranger and doomed is a man, his soul choked with cold dust till his body's decayed, and everyone but Black Lung done turned him away. Black Lung, Black Lung, on your hands I see cold, as you reach for my life and you torture my soul. Cold dust and water holes down in that dark cave where I spent my life's blood digging my own grave. Down at the graveyard, the boss man came with his little bunch of flowers. Dear God, what a shame. Oh, take back your flowers, don't you sing no sad song. The die has been cast now, and a good man is gone. West Virginia, my home. West Virginia's where I belong. In the dead of the night, in the still, in the quiet, I'll slip away like a bird and fly back to those hills, the place that I call home. Well, it's been years now since I left there. This city life's about got the best of me. I don't remember now why I left so free, what I wanted to do, what I wanted to see. But I can sure remember where I come from. West Virginia, all my home. West Virginia's where I belong. Place that I
you stretch, and after I get a drink. So why don't we take about 10 or 12 minutes? Get acquainted with anybody you don't know here. Go talk to them, okay? That's important.
people work so hard for most everything. On Buffalo Creek it was raining and gray, and the people was rising to meet the new day. Well, the bacon was a sizzling and the coffee was pouring, but the dam up the holler couldn't hold anymore. Waters raced through the valley, smashed town after town. Homes dashed to pieces, whole families were drowned. Well, how could it happen? And how could this be? The dam had belonged to the coal company. An act of God, the bosses did cry. But God ain't that cruel, you can see through your life. Takes our coal but don't share in the fear. Whose greed for money has cost us so dear.
Years I've been a musician in residence of Randolph County, West Virginia. That's where Elkins is. And so I've sung in the schools a lot, with the seniors a lot. And I've also had time to spend with older people, listening to their songs and stories, and gathering up some of them. I always liked the old people a lot. I never had any grandparents. They all died before I was old enough to know any of them, so I guess I sort of ask every older person I ever saw to take me to raise for the old kid. I was in Kentucky one time, back in, I think it was 65, I was doing a survey there. That was an important thing to do, every now and then do a survey. Census or something, you can see how people live, and they can recognize that their government still cares about them. Send people out to ask them questions. Show a little concern. They keep wondering, knowing their government's going to send out some people with some answers. And those people never show up. But I was traveling up in what was probably at that time, and may still be, the most backwards county of eastern Kentucky, Leslie County, Kentucky, up above Hyden. Some of you may have heard of Hyden. It's where the Frontier Nursing Program got started. Any of you who are interested in rural medicine would know about that, maybe. Was and still is a very valiant program devoted to home care, home birth, maternity care, and so on. And there are very few of the creeks that people live on there have roads to speak of. Most of the roads are creek beds, and most of the travelers are done either with a sled and a mule or by foot. I had a four-wheel drive government Jeep, so I could travel a long way up. A place called Hell for Sarton Creek, if you believe that. That's what it was called. That was the name of it. And I drove all the way to the head of Helper Sergeant Creek. There was a little post office, dry goods store up there. And I asked about the person that I was looking for that I was supposed to survey. And they said that she lives way up the head of Brush Creek. She lives back in the country. So I drove my Jeep up the side of the mountain as far as I could get, and then I left it and started walking. I walked way out on top of a ridge. There was a little pasture field there. On the ridge of the sun was shining. It was all pretty. I felt it was the prettiest place I'd ever seen in the sea for a long way. As I walked out through there, I saw an old man coming down through the pasture field. Got the fence and vaulted over and down to greet me. Glad to see him. We shook hands and talked about the weather and one thing and another. I told him who I was looking for. Oh, he said, "That's my daughter. She lives right up the creek here. We'll walk. I'll walk up there with her." I said, "That would be nice." So we walked up there together. We got to the house and this old woman came out on the porch. Poor old soul, she leaned up against the post. I told her what I wanted and she invited me in. We had coffee. Three of us sat around and talked a long time, and then the old man got up and left. After he left, I said, "That man told me that he is your father." I said, "He must have some people. You don't mind my man." "Oh, yes. He's 107. Well, I said, "That's the oldest man I think I ever met, I ever saw." Where does he live? "Oh," she says, "he lives back here in the country out on the mountain." "Stays there by himself, does he?" "No," she said, "he lives there with my mother." "Oh." Been together for, well, how long have they been together? "Oh," she said, "I'm 83. All that time back on that beautiful mountain, just loving one another and being together, I said, it's the most beautiful thing I ever heard of." "Oh," she said, "they don't speak." Get over it." "No," she said, "they ain't spoken for 40 years. Well, I said, "it must have been an awful bad thing that caused them to fall out like that, where they wouldn't speak for 40 years. "Oh," she said, "they don't remember what it was." That was my introduction to Leslie County and Brush Creek. And it was
it just wasn't, there was nothing about my prior life that prepared me for that. Never seen anything like it before. Never seen anything like any of Eastern Kentucky before. Never heard English spoken the way it was spoken there before. Very beautiful way of speaking and storytelling, and a very different use of language than I was accustomed to. I've grown up sort of in a dual situation in Washington, D.C. and in eastern West Virginia, but the language I heard spoken in Kentucky wasn't anything even like eastern West Virginia. It was just different sort of place. Then after I came to move to Randolph County in Elkton, got to poking around some of the old people there, I met a man by the name of Kearns Hammond. He's like a father to me. He's in his 80s somewhere. He doesn't know exactly where he is in his 80s, but he's somewhere. But he knows everything else about himself. And he's a member of a very large family that sort of wandered into the Cranberry Backcountry, which is a very remote, isolated section, wilderness section of East Central West Virginia. And it was a remote and isolated wilderness up through the Civil War. It was an uncharted wilderness. There weren't any roads through it. In fact, the Hammonds family were among a few of the only people who knew that wilderness, who knew what its boundaries were, who knew all the creeks and the rivers. They came there probably in the early 1860s from eastern Kentucky, along the Big Sandy River, where they were having trouble. There's a lot of trouble. You remember the Big Sandy River was where the Hatfield McCoy feud broke out after the war. But there was a lot of trouble previous to the war, too. And the Hammonds were involved in some of it. Some of their stories reflect some terrible skirmishes they had down there along the Big Sandy River when they were floating logs down on the Quabbin River. And so they left there in sort of a hurry. And, Harris and Pete and Dick and John, a whole bunch of them, moved over into the Cranberry Backcountry. They're on the Williams River. The Williams River is where the rainbow gathering is just held this summer. I don't know how I felt about the rainbow gathering. I probably would have felt differently about the rainbow gathering had it been in any other place in the world, except the Williams River. But the Williams River being the cradle of the Hammonds family civilization. Civilization. I guess I felt a little funny about it. But there the Hammonds came, and Kearns still talks about his grandfather's early settlement of that country, though it happened last week. Well, he's probably 84, 85 years old. He grew to young adulthood before any of that forest was cut. Huge trees. Bigger around than this space right here. 7, 8, 10 feet in diameter, these trees were hundreds of feet tall. They grew in a forest that looked more like a cathedral than a forest. There was no underbrush. They were very far apart. The trees were just quiet. Place that Hammonds is described as being dark by day and dark by night because the leafy growth of the trees was so heavy. And they wandered in there in the Williams River country, and Kearns tells a story. I have it on tape. I'll play it for you after a while.
I was hoping we could set up some speakers and an amplifier and make it part of the program tonight, so that you could really, really hear him telling the story. But he tells a story about his grandfather cutting clapboards for the house, for his little, it was just a hut, he said, that they lived in. It wasn't finished, and he and his wife and two children had moved into it. And he was using a fro, which is a blade with a handle on it, and hit it with a mallet that he can split out shingles or boards or anything out of a long pile of logs. Hold it in a contraption called a break, I think it's called. Whack it. Splits off a piece of wood. And he was splitting out these shingles. Old Jess, this is Grandpa Jess. And all of a sudden he heard a sound like pop, 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 pop. And he said he looked up and it was just blue everywhere. And he said, and there they stood holding them muskets. And he said, that sound was them cocking them guns. The captain stepped up and said, now boys, stop. He said, I'm giving command to stop. He said, don't shoot. And he came up and stepped up to Grand Tap and he said, what's your name? Grand Tap told him. He said, what are you doing here? Grand Tap said, I'm splitting out some boards for my house. He said, I live in a shanty down over the hill here. With my wife. Have you got anything to eat? And Pap said, no, not very much. All I said, got some beans, a little corn, some taters. Said, I just dug some taters. He said, we got some cornbread down there. Well, the captain said, I believe we'll just all go down and get a bite to eat. It's your house. And Pap said, well, we can go down. Not room for all of you to go in there. He said, it's just a little house, just one room. Well, they went down. Grandpap went in, Captain went in with him. All that could fit in there went in. They didn't have no cook stove, just cooked on a fireplace. Now he said, Nance, that was my grandma, he said, these fellas are wanting something to eat. He said, better cook them up some cornbread, he said. So she cooked up some cornbread. After a little bit, before it was done, said the captain said, that's enough. Took it off, took the cornbread out, and fed the soldiers. They put on another one, fed that out, put them on as long as they had grain there to eat. He said, they fed it all to them. After they'd eat, then the captain said to him, said, you got any bullets for your gun? Got any powder, any caps for your rifle? Grandpap said, no, not very many. He said, I got about 3 bullets, he said, maybe 3 loads. He said, I just keep it around. Kill me a little meat to eat. You talk about hard times. Back there when Grandpap and them was living there, when they wanted to kill a deer or a bear, they waited till it got between them and a great big tree, and then they'd shoot it to kill the deer. And when the bull-